Dewey's here at Groundswell this year, the 26th and 27th of June, close to London, UK. Many friends of the podcast will be there. John Kempf, Abby Rose, Benedict Boezel, Henry Dimbleby, Claire Hill, Russ Carrington, Andy Cato, Tim Coates, and many, many more. See you there. An update with Roman and Christian of eAgronom, who are working with 1,500 grain farmers across 1 million hectares in Central and Eastern Europe, and they are starting to pay farmers for the carbon they capture. Welcome to another episode of Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, Investing as if the planet mattered, a podcast show where I talk to the pioneers in the regenerative food and agriculture space to learn more on how to put our money to work to regenerate soil, people, local communities and ecosystems while making an appropriate and fair return. Why am I focused on soil and regeneration? Because so many of the pressing issues we face today have their roots in how we treat our land, grow our food and what we eat. And it's time that we, as investors, big and small, and consumers, start paying much more attention to the dirt slash soil underneath our feet. In March last year, we launched our membership community to make it easy for fans to support our work, and so many of you have joined as a member. We've launched different types of benefits, exclusive content, Q&A webinars with former guests, Ask Me Anything sessions, plus so much more to come in the future. For more information on the different tiers, benefits, and how to become a member, check gumroad.com/investingregeneg or find the link below. Thank you. Welcome to another episode. We have Robin and Christian back on the show. In October 2020, we had a long talk about how to partner with farmers and technology. And today they're back and we're going to talk about why they're focusing on carbon. So welcome, Christian and Robin.
Hello. Hi, it's good to be back.
For anybody that didn't listen to the other show, I will definitely put a link in the show notes below. But just, Robin, in 2-3 sentences, I mean, you've been pitching so often now that you for sure have memorized the best way to summarize eAgronom. But just for anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, what is eAgronom? And then we get into the carbon, into your current round, some updates. But what is a good introduction into what you've built over the last years?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, eAgronom is number one farm management system in Central Eastern Europe. So farmers use this to plan, manage and analyze their activities. And based on this data, we also give advice to farmers what crops to grow, what tasks to do, what fertilizers to use, and so on. And the result of this is increased efficiency, so higher profits, and actually also smaller carbon footprint. But what makes eAgronom special is that in some cases, instead of farmers paying to us, we are paying to farmers. So they're benefiting from our carbon program now and get paid for capturing carbon from the atmosphere into the soil.
That's super exciting. We're definitely going to unpack that. But just to give a flavor of what has happened since October, you've grown a lot. Like, how many farmers are you working with right now? We're talking April 2021, just to give an understanding of how many farmers and then, of course, the hectares that they represent.
Yeah, we have about 1,500 farms on platform. And they manage across this fleet over 1 million hectares of grain land. We've recently expanded and made ourselves available also in Australia. Our main markets are here in Central Eastern Europe. Biggest one is Poland, Estonia, obviously, where we're from as well. Latvia, we have some clients also in Romania and Czech. And in October, we've grown about 50% since, which is a good growth season for us. You know, we can mostly recruit farmers when they're not on their fields, and that's after harvest and before spring. So those have been a good 5 months for us.
Wow, that's a good amount of hectares. And you're currently, obviously, this is not investment advice to anybody listening, but I'm very interested in, as the title of this podcast, Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food, you're currently raising a round. Can you share a bit more on that, what you're looking for in terms of investors, what you're finding in the market? Like, how has those discussions over the last 6 months have gone? What are you seeing in the market in terms of investors that are getting, I think, at least we see on our side, a lot more interest in the market, but maybe a lot of people are new to the space as well. So what has been your experience in this latest fundraising round that you are currently in the middle of?
Well, first of all, why do we need money right now at all?
That's a very good question to start with, Robin, yeah.
Yeah, well, we are number one player in Poland, Estonia and Latvia. And besides this, we have some first customers. So we can't say we are in those markets, but we are ready to start scaling in those markets, in four other markets, including actually Australia. But mainly in Poland, Latvia and Estonia, we have proved that the Agronom model works quite well. So our annual customer value is higher than the customer acquisition cost, and so we are efficient in recruiting new farmers to the platform. We are also upselling the digital advisory package and now bringing those farmers into carbon program. But obviously, those three markets are not enough for changing the agriculture in total. And that's why we need the financing as well to scale to new markets. Mainly, actually, the markets where we already have some customer base, but then also to bring carbon program to these farmers so that they can benefit from capturing more carbon into the soil, growing humus balances, reducing their own emissions, and etc.
We touched upon that carbon piece briefly last time. We mostly looked at how your platform and technology and software is helping to plan much better and work much more efficiently and effectively to make sure that you don't rotate yourself into problems. I think we mentioned specifically last time, and I keep using that phrase, which is very interesting. But the carbon piece, I think, has shifted quite a bit, or has, let's say, accelerated over the last months. Can you explain a bit? Everybody has seen probably the attention or the hype we're going up to in terms of soil carbon, but what is happening on the ground with customers, your farmers, and then potentially other customers that are buying the carbon, the soil carbon off you? What has been happening since October, since we last spoke?
Absolutely. Well, there are many ways how farmers can benefit from capturing carbon and reducing their emissions. And just to share the load, let me explain the first example that we call soil carbon, and then Christian can explain about carbon offset units. But with soil carbon, we have managed to successfully reduce the land rent of farmers who capture carbon into the soil. As you probably know, then half of the land in Europe is not owned by farmers, but rented to farmers, 40% in North America. So there are plenty of very big landowners who are long-term investors, and they want to make sure that their asset value is safe in the long term. Now, it's possible to farm in different ways. You can farm in a way that you have more carbon and more humus in the soil every year, but you can also farm in a way that you have less carbon and humus in the soil every year. And based on this, after, 10 to 15 years, the land value will be different. If you capture more carbon to the soil, then you have more nutrients in the soil as well, and the land value is higher.
Do you see that value already, that connection between, let's say, the health of the soil and the land value? Because that's a lot of discussion around it, that maybe a lot of investors don't recognize that, or a lot of landowners, and thus there's a disconnect between what we see and what... But you see, you've been working with some landowners that do recognize that healthy soils is in their benefit.
Absolutely. Well, the first landowner with whom we actually made this deal, if they are valuing how much they're ready to pay for a new land that they are buying, they're actually looking to... They have a point system, and one of the attributes over there is how much humus or carbon, organic carbon, there is actually in the soil. And it makes sense. It really makes sense. And that's how we made a deal with them as well. For their farmers who rent land from them, they actually have 14,000 hectares, but their farmers obviously have in total 80,000 hectares. So farmers who rent land from them. And they now give a smaller rent to farmers with positive humus balance. So farmers who capture more carbon from the atmosphere to the soil, and higher rent for farmers who don't do it.
And you manage that program for them, for this landowner. And these farmers are clients of you as well. And how do you manage that? How do you measure that?
Do you want to learn how to invest, or are you an entrepreneur and want to build companies in the regenerative food and agriculture space? Or do you work in big ag and big food and want to really move the needle? We have developed a new video course for you. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course or in the show notes description below.
Yeah, so over there we use models that are built by local scientists. Now, if we move more to what Christian will explain later about carbon offset units and carbon offsetting, there we do soil samples as well. But models are okay for landowners for their internal use. If they trust the models enough, then they trust that, okay, if farmers are doing those activities, then their land quality in the future will be higher. So models for them are okay. But if we talk about producing carbon credits, then soil measuring to verify models are very important as well.
But in this case, basically, you're working with a large landowner and their farmers, and because you basically are the software for the farmers to manage their full operations, you know what they're doing or not doing in terms of plowing, not plowing, in terms of applying certain things, etc. And they pay a lower rent to the landowner if they apply certain things, which is a very interesting, because of so longer term, it's interesting for them because of the cost. So there's a very interesting relationship there, very interesting incentive structure that you have been able to build. And you see that because you did one, you see that being interesting for other, you see an interest from other landowners.
Yeah, we made this deal with the biggest landowner in Estonia, and we are currently discussing with very big landlord in Poland as well. But in the end, as you said, everybody wins. So farmer gets to pay smaller land rent, and actually the farm gets more efficient as well, but that's a secondary benefit. Then a landowner gets to make sure that their asset value is safe in the long term, and then eAgronom gets both FMS fee and then verification fee from the landowner.
You get a small fee from both sides, which is very interesting. And then, Christian, to you, then there's the option to potentially sell these carbon credits with a few extra questions, obviously, around measurement and around outcome, etc. What's been happening there?
Yeah, that opportunity is definitely there. But creating carbon credits in farming in itself is not even the main goal. The main goal is to create an extra source of revenue for the farmer. And if we zoom out a bit, farming generally is capital intensive. So there's high costs involved, but margins are not very high. And unpredictability is increasing. So there are more and more years where surprises happen, extreme weather events, bad yields, low yields. So farmers struggle a bit more than they used to. And on the other side, farming is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions globally. Then where the opportunity comes in is now on a global level, I think the awareness of climate change and the need to do something about it is growing. There's Paris Climate Agreement. If you look around, many countries and large corporations have committed to become net zero over the next 20 or 30 years and to significantly reduce their emissions and offset the rest. And farming is an opportunity because soils are a large carbon sink. So that's where we believe farmers can come in. And while they continue doing what they do, growing crops and feeding the people, we can also create an additional source of income here through carbon offsets or carbon removal units. And that's the path we've embarked on right now with a small selection of farmers in Estonia and Poland. There's a few thousands of hectares today piloting based on our methodology. We follow FAO guidelines and Rotham Sea soil sampling models. We also work with local scientists to localize the models to local conditions because soils are different and weather conditions are different in each of the countries. So yeah, we do want to make sure we maintain high standards and meet the highest expectations in terms of methodology, project requirements, and then how do we establish the baseline? How do we model the outcomes and then verify the projected outcomes through soil testing regularly?
And how far are you in a sense? What's missing or where are you already at? Like, let's say a big buyer, I mean, one of the big ones that has mentioned or smaller ones that said, I want to be net positive by this year. So I need to offset or remove. If they knock on the door, maybe they already have. Like, what's the current status of the carbon selling project? Not necessarily the carbon modeling with the landowners, because they have, I'm imagining, like Robin said, a lower, they need less and they need, anyway, they need longer term. But what's the current status of the carbon project and what's still, if something, what's still missing?
Yeah, right now we're working with large companies in our home country, Estonia, who wish to offset their remaining emissions. And why they also want to be part of this project is to help local farmers in our home countries to do good and help them contribute to slowing down climate change and removing carbon from circulation, getting it back into the soil and keeping it there. And so they have committed to purchase the first few thousand credits coming out of the pilot farmers this summer. And then we plan to scale over summer so as we get to the harvest, that after this summer's harvest, a larger number of farmers would switch practices, having joined the program. And then a year from now, we can deliver the first carbon credits from this larger group. initially in Poland, Estonia, and Latvia. And we're targeting a couple of 100 farms and over 100,000 hectares of grain land in this broader group as we go now.
And what do you see, maybe for Robin, what as you're targeting specific farms, what is the criteria and what are the practices you, let's say, I'm imagining with the farmers are changing, or how do you to help them speed up and thus capture more? Like, what are the main things that are different from the rest of the farmers you're working with?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question, because if you talk about carbon offsetting and carbon credits, then one of the challenges, but it's really okay challenge, and I think a positive problem to have still, is that it's for good farmers, it's very hard to produce carbon credits. So farmers who already capture carbon, carbon credit in essence is something that has to be additional. So no one should support, if they want to offset their emissions, then they shouldn't support something that already happens. It should be additional activity.
So you need to work with the farmers that are not doing any of this. Or otherwise, I've seen a picture somewhere saying, you're only paying, I think it was in the US, like as a joke, but it's somehow true. I've been no-till and rotational for the last 15 years. Then I'm not part of, cannot be part of this program. Let me get my carbon decapture machine, aka the plow, and let's just plow everything and start over, which is, of course, what you don't want. Like, that's the risk we are all running. So how do you get around that?
Exactly. And that was a big challenge. We thought, like, many ways how we can, like, should we maybe put some of the credits aside that farmers are generating and give it just to farmers who already do good? And, well, there were many thoughts that we had. But in the end, then we found or understood that there are other ways how farmers can benefit from the carbon program. For example, selling low carbon crops. We are not offering this today, but in the future, that's one of the things that we want to start offering. That farmers, for example, my father, who is growing climate positive crops, so capturing more carbon than he's emitting with activities, so that he could get higher price for the grain that he's selling. But at the same time, if there is a farmer doing a change in activities and starting capturing more carbon now, then this farmer has a choice. Either he or she can sell carbon credits away and then the farm balance would be a negative again, or he or she can get a higher price for grain. So it's very important to avoid double counting as well, because otherwise, let's say the big food company would say that their scope 3 emissions are zero, all farmers are carbon neutral, but at the same time, these farmers are selling their credits away to Shell, big oil company, let's say, and they say that, hey, we are also carbon neutral. So that's something that we have to avoid. So in this sense, after understanding this, then we feel now that it's the model really works. So those farmers who do already good can benefit from getting higher price for the grain or even some other benefits as well. And those farmers who are in the beginning of this journey of going climate positive, they can choose if they want to get higher price for the grain or sell their credits.
You know, I just wanted to add that this is also the way, so there's a permanence concern that is often asked. So, you know, how do you know what is being put back in stays there forever? I think that's the definition of a carbon credit, an offset, so that it needs to be a permanent change. And one way of ensuring that is to continue. So let's say we have the 10-year project timeline with farmers. They establish their baseline and they apply new practices, start creating creating change, they will be on a different trajectory. Then the 10 years is over, last of their carbon offsets or removal units have been paid to them. What happens then? And how do we manage the risk of them not falling back to some old practices and, for example, plowing again? And that the same thing that Robin talked about, good farmers today will also apply in the future, that we can work with those farmers then 10 years from now to continue sustainable practices beyond the life of the carbon project. And they will then be able to benefit from these sustainably farmed options where companies will have demand to purchase their crops and reward them for the good practices, especially 10 years from now. This must be much more of a norm than it is today.
Sorry, the carbon paying is really a transition phase, and we all need to work on making sure that the market of ingredients, of produce, etc., starts rewarding low carbon or even carbon positive crops. And that's the long-term carrot, basically, to keep everyone going, apart from lower costs and all the other incentives that hopefully makes the farm much more efficient and effective. but it needs to come from the market at some point where they sell into, which is something you can start building and probably are. Like, how do you connect the best ingredients, the best quality, the best flavor, but also the best carbon balance of a ton of grain, basically, to a market buyer that is interested in that?
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, some activities still will be considered as additional even after 20 years. Some activities that wouldn't be profitable without carbon credits. But the goal is that after, let's say, 3 to 5 years, we can arrange a very big party where every shot that you take will capture also carbon. So imagine this, how good people would feel partying over there.
And how drunk they would get, yeah. And just an idea, what's your, like, the farms you work with now with a few thousand hectares, what are you seeing in terms of, with this primal, like the first phase in terms of capture potential? What do you see per hectare? Very different circumstances, I imagine, but just as a range. We talked about ranges before, but what do you see as a range? What is possible? Because we see very different numbers around. What have you seen in the field that is actually doable?
Yeah, we've modeled many scenarios now and worked in detail with these first farmers. And what we are seeing is that the range is somewhere between, it really depends where the farmer is coming from, like what his baseline is. And it's something between half a ton per hectare per year to 1.5 to 2 tons, depending on which practices he's already applying. And then in addition to creating carbon credits or carbon offset units, most farmers also benefit from reduced amount of inputs. So they will be using less fuel, so fewer passes across the field. So there's some fuel savings, and there's some savings from optimizing fertilizer use. And we see it's roughly 80-20. So about 80% of the benefit for the farmer is coming from the carbon removal units, and then 20% from reduced input costs.
And do you see that happening and changing over time as well? Like, if they're reducing, is there any difference between, let's say, very advanced ones that have been working the soil for a long time in a different way? Maybe like your father, Robin, that is already carbon positive, because I think he's been farming organic and beyond organic for a long time. Do you see that, like, in that cohort that you're working with, like the more extreme ones are different there? Or what have you seen in the field with this few pilot farms so far?
Yeah, well, if the time goes on and a farmer is continuing farming in this way, then they will see that there are many other benefits as well, that it's harder to prove in paper.
The biodiversity piece and yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say if you eat healthy, then most likely you won't get sick that much. And same is true with the field. But it's really, it's difficult to prove those benefits on the paper, but it's easier to prove at first benefits like, hey, you are reducing your fuel that much, or red clover is capturing that much nitrogen and you don't have to, you can reduce the amount that you're putting again, saving some money. And then we will pay this amount additionally. And that's helping farmers to make the change. That's actually something to be taught as well. So current carbon programs, the contracts that we are signing with farmers are 10-year contracts. So that's a 10-year period. And for the first period, additional activity is whatever activity that farmer wasn't doing previously. So if farmer wasn't doing it, then it's considered additional. But after this 10-year period, additional activities will be only something that farmer didn't do even this last 10-year period, and those that wouldn't be profitable without carbon program. Because during this period, we want to prove that actually several activities are profitable anyways for farmers.
Even without the carbon piece, yeah.
But it's still additional, because without this extra benefit from the carbon program or extra money or extra income, those farmers wouldn't be willing to make this change. They couldn't afford, or they wouldn't hire someone like eAgronom to guide them, because with every farmer, we give them agronomical advice how they can make this change and to make sure that they benefit from this. And they probably wouldn't be willing to take the risk as well, because with every risk, like every farmer has, average person has 40 years career, and farmers as well. But the difference is that farmer is getting feedback only once a year. So imagine if you would do podcast only once a year, how much would you consider before every question and everything you would say? So that's the situation that farmers have, and that's why they're that risk averse. But this carbon program helps them to make this change. And then after a 10-year period, they will find out that, hey, we should continue those because they are profitable anyways.
And do you see, let's say, any, this ties perfectly in the risky part, let's say the more risky or the more adventurous pieces of carbon farming, which you see in other places as well, like integration of animals, very diverse cover crop mixes, like 15, 20 types we've seen around, maybe integration of trees as well into the fields. Is that something you imagine maybe in year 8 or year 12 of the program with some adventurous farmers? Are people already asking about that? Like, is this going to enable some farmers that want to and are ready, obviously, to take those kind of risks? Is that something you're thinking of, or are we not there yet?
I think it really depends on the farmer, but it's not considered. We don't have this in the financial plans, our own financial plans. But I personally believe that once farmers see the benefits from the Karma program, then they want to go more and more this path. So using plants in the fields and so on, this is something that we want to, for sure, research and offer to farmers. Right now, we are obviously doing like simple things, reduce plowing, use cover crops, and maybe something extra. But once farmers see benefits and see that, hey, did that really work, then probably they're ready for the next step as well.
And do you imagine any kind of, let's say, farming competition, like between different farms, who can do the fastest buildup of soil carbon without cheating and obviously getting a lot of outside fertilization into, or a lot of manure or a lot of compost?
That question is straight to the point, because I think it's an international format, Soil Jorandis. And the format of this competition is that you put your underwear, not actually your underwear, that is from this specific natural material, you bury it under the soil, and then after a few months you take it away, and the more it's eaten by bacteria and basically soil animals, the more healthy your soil is. And we started this competition in Estonia and Poland, and I think Latvia as well. And you know what's crazy? Before this, the hottest competitions in farming were plowing competition, who plows best, the yield competition, who gets most yield out of this. But now that's the hottest competition in farming in our region right now. So randomly, like this, our sales guy posted this in Poland. He was driving his daughter to the school, and he heard national Polish radio, nationwide radio, speaking without our initiative, actually speaking about this competition, that hey, and about the importance of soil health. And the same thing's happening in Estonia as well. Media is picking it up. Farmers are sharing that they are burying their undies and so on. And that's really, really cool to see that the hottest competitions right now in the industry are not anymore plowing or yield, but it's soil health. That's really cool.
I will find a link. It's really interesting how something silly, it's almost silly between brackets, can really capture the imagination of farmers. And I've seen it on, people have done it with tea bags as well, to really see, okay, to have an easy measurement or an easy proxy to see how fast does, in these days, cotton basically break down, and does, how healthy is my soil? Everybody can do it. It's funny enough to share, but it gets right to the point of how healthy, how alive is your soil. And I think some people will be in for a shock, and some others will be in for a nice surprise.
Absolutely.
And with that, I want to be conscious of your time and talk a bit about the current fundraising round you're doing. Like, what are you, I mean, the reason you shared already, you're in a number of countries and you want to expand in those countries, actually, not necessarily other countries, but in the countries you're already active in. What are you looking for? Like, what have you seen talking to a lot of investors over the last months? Is it different than a year ago? Is it, what have you felt basically in all those pitches, obviously from a distance because nobody's traveling? What has been the interest from the investor world, maybe the traditional investor world as well, into the topics of soil carbon, into the topics of agriculture? Is there a lot of interest? Is there, we still have to do a lot of work? What do you see?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because, well, from one side, carbon is very hot. And that's something that all VCs are telling as well, that, hey, that's because we are among the first movers in Europe with this as well, in agricultural carbon offsetting. And that's really interesting for VCs. Now, at the same time, if we go deeper, then it really depends. The North American investors know much more about this industry, probably because it has been there longer time. And then if we come to Europe, then that's really exciting. But the investors are currently in this learning space, that they're reading articles and just trying to understand where are the challenges and what questions to ask and so on. But there is interest, absolutely, but it's in the beginning.
Yeah, as we talk to the funds in our data room, we have a whole section for background reading materials for you. So then where we just keep compiling resources for them to get up to speed. And it's a very interesting topic for them, but they need to learn a lot and are looking for more information to understand the space better.
And I can imagine that, it's great that you're doing all this education to investors, but at some point you would like the investment in the company and not just, you're not an education company, you're a farming company and you need to get going. So, but that's the pioneering role as well. Like you're educating probably way more investors than end up investing because they're maybe not comfortable yet with the whole topic. And it's the first time they hear a lot of things. I'm still amazed, I think, for how fast this topic has come to the forefront, but how much research people have to do to fully grasp it, how many farms they need to visit, how much they have to understand, how many they have to read. And yeah, we're definitely in the early days of that. And so you're currently raising your Series A. Can you share a bit more on that?
Yeah, we are raising 7 million euros. I said before, scaling in some new markets where we have customers, but we don't have local sales force yet, to accelerate the carbon program and to scale it. We have proven the carbon program with the small scale. And there is actually, interesting is that there are actually more interest from the farmer side than we can ourselves physically manage. But now we have to build some more technology behind there that we can scale this part of the business as well. So that's one of the areas. And then, the continuous product development as well. But yeah, we are raising 7 million. We have a bit more than 5 million euros committed already. But we are currently in the process of choosing the lead investor. For the lead investor, we have given up this dream that we would want someone who knows more about farming and carbon business than we know. So that's not the main criteria for the investor.
That slot is not available anymore for anybody listening. So yeah. If they think they know more, they can get in touch. But you've given up that dream. But so what are you looking for now?
Yeah. So, but we are looking mainly for VCs who help us to secure the Series B round. So who want to invest in Series A. They want to follow on in Series B as well and get us behind the tables of really top-notch investors over there. We have some great commitments already, like founder of formerly called TransferWise. Now it's called Wise.
I'm a customer, yeah. They changed the names over time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a very, very interesting company.
Unicorn, they're valued at 3 billion or so. Well, actually more. There are rumors about IPO and so on, but another topic. And obviously they will help with this exact topic as well, but looking for lead. And then from the following investors, so that's why we have actually quite a many following commitments. We try to choose VCs from different markets that are interesting for us, because we see that even if these VCs are not necessarily like with farming background, they still have access, better access than we have to local media and some local contacts and so on. And that's really helpful.
Yeah, so you don't have to rely only on burying underwear to get on the radio, yeah. Which is a great way, but still, yeah.
It is a great way.
So I want to be conscious of your time and thank you so much for this update. I think a lot has happened in 6 months or less, actually, and very excited for your carbon program and programs coming over the next years. And obviously for all the work you have been doing, and like the farming season has started, which means you're growth season in terms of new farmers has stopped, but now you have to serve all the farmers that are in the field, planting, monitoring, modeling, and all of that. So I wish you a lot of luck with that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Koen.
If you would like to learn more on how to put money to work in regenerative food and agriculture, find our video course on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course. This course will teach you to understand the opportunities, to get to know the main players, to learn about the main trends and how to evaluate a new investment opportunity, like what kind of questions to ask. Find out more on investinginregenerativeagriculture.com/course. If you found the Investing in Regenerative Agriculture and Food podcast valuable, there are a few simple ways you can use to support it. Number one, rate and review the podcast on your podcast app. That's the best way for other listeners to find the podcast, and it only takes a few seconds. Number two, share this podcast on social media or email it to your friends and colleagues. Number three, if this podcast has been of value to you and if you have the means, please join my membership community to help grow this platform and allow me to take it further. You can find all the details on gumroad.com/investingregenag or in the description below. Thank you so much and see you at the next podcast.